From the very beginning, my life was tainted. Mama saw to it by giving me a long, ridiculous name, Grace Lee Eudora Abbott.
Today on Arts and Letters, we'll be talking with Northeast Arkansas Delta writer Talia Tate Berner. Her novel, The Accidental Salvation of Gracie Lee, traces the life of 10-year-old Gracie Lee Eudora Abbott.
When I eventually asked Mama about my long name, she gave an equally long explanation. Grace, because I was born on a Tuesday morning, and Tuesday's child was full of grace, whatever that meant. Lee, because that was Daddy's first name. And Eudora, after his favorite author, Eudora Welty.
Highlights of Turning 10 and Life's Little Salvations with Talia Tate Berner. And The Accidental Salvation of Gracie Lee on Arts and Letters.
One Mississippi, two Mississippi. The truck engine fell quiet, leaving only the sounds of tree frogs. Lucky's ears perked. I rubbed the white spot on the back of his neck, and he relaxed onto the floor beside me. Three Mississippi, four Mississippi. Tucking Barbie underneath the throw pillow on my lap, I traced my fingers over the red blooms that covered my library book. Five Mississippi, six Mississippi. Abby, my little sister, lay dozing on the opposite end of the couch, sprawled flat on her back. She had a way of sleeping through anything, a loud television show, or even one of Mama and Daddy's late-night arguments.
No cares in the world, and she can just be a little girl, never knowing.
From the studios of KUAR in Little Rock, I'm J. Bradley Minnick, and welcome to Arts and Letters, a program providing opportunities for the celebration of the arts and humanities.
She'll gear her mindset to fantasize all that she sees televised. Sad depiction.
Today we'll be talking with Talia Tate Berner. Her novel, The Accidental Salvation of Gracie Lee, published by Southern Yellow Pine Publishing, focuses on the Abbott family, torn apart by illness and the strength and salvation that comes with facing down one's demons.
It seemed to me that when someone got sick, they should take care of themselves, doing the best, most healthy things possible to get well. Daddy did the opposite.
School just turns out to be the smallest fraction of reality.
Talia Tate Berner, former mud pie maker and commercial banker who lives with her husband and two miniature schnauzers, Lucy and Annabelle, and believes that most any dish can be improved with a side of collard greens. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
So the book begins with Gracie waiting for her daddy, who appears to be in a perpetually bad mood.
Yes. No matter what is going on in Gracie's day, there's always this long pregnant pause before daddy walks into the kitchen at the end of his day. He's a cotton farmer. He's stressed. And she knows that she can determine his mood by the sound of the gravel on the driveway. So she waits and she counts with her one Mississippi, two Mississippi. And depending on how long it takes for him to walk in the door, she knows what sort of mood he's going to be in. Seven Mississippi, eight Mississippi. Slipping my hands under the pillow, I twirled Barbie's silky hair and stroked the bumpy fabric of her PennDOT skirt. Mama sewed most of Barbie's clothes from scrap material, and sometimes we even dressed alike. Barbie and me, not Mama and me. Nine Mississippi, ten Mississippi. I stared at the back door for a good long time. What was Daddy doing? Resting? Thinking? Deciding whether or not to turn around and leave for good?
It took me a while to figure out that this book, although it's about salvation, really is about illness. Right away, we don't know how sick the father is or feels, but I think his mood has a whole lot to do with how he's feeling that day, too.
I will catch you.
sick, and Gracie doesn't really understand that because it hasn't been revealed to the children yet. And he also is just stressed. That's one of the things I wanted to convey in my book, is just the all-encompassing stress and hard work of farming and how that affects the whole family.
You grew up on a farm, right?
I did. So I grew up on a farm. The book is definitely autobiographical to some extent. The people and the places are based on people that I knew. I took personalities sort of over the top, but the plot line is fictional.
Where was your farm?
It's in Northeast Arkansas in Mississippi County, and we still own that farm. I'm a fourth generation landowner of that farm, so it's a huge part of who I am, and that farm always comes through in my writing somehow, nature and farming and soil.
And how about the father? He's such a complex character.
He is based on my dad. My dad was a great farmer. People still talk about him. He passed away at age 57.
Oh, boy.
But he was in a perpetual bad mood. He was not the monster I paint in this book. I took his personality over the top. But I did draw on him, and some of the little adventures that Gracie has and some of the action with her dad are based on my true childhood experiences.
You talked a little bit about the pauses, the one Mississippi, two Mississippi. There's this sense that dad's going to come in and she just doesn't know what to expect. When we read those pauses, are we imagining there's fear?
I think she definitely has a combination of fear and just the unknown. What sort of mood will he be in? Will he be upset about the weather? You know, did Mama spend too much money on groceries?
Diamond rings and conversations, wrinkled dreams and aspirations in her soul. She'll lose control when everything inside is crumbling. Fears and what she hides trapped in her mind. She'll learn to walk the line.
She's feeling nervous and upset, and she just doesn't know what to expect.
Right. Daddy was in a bad mood. I could tell by the slow, drawn-out crunch of gravel on the driveway. He had parked by the old plum tree and was taking forever to walk through the back door. He was predictable, just like my life so far.
Hide your secrets in the wall and visit them when you are tall.
So I did want to create this character in Lee Abbott who had many layers, and I wanted to show that he was not just the stereotypical farmer that people may think of when they think of a farmer in Northeast Arkansas, that he was intelligent, he was well-educated, he was well-read, and he worked hard, and he did have a lot of stress, but he took care of his family, and Gracie is too young at the time to realize that everything he did for the girls and for his wife. Daddy tossed his grimy thermos and a stack of ledger papers on the side table near his favorite recliner, and then wiped his brow with a handkerchief he pulled from his back pocket. When he nodded and grunted in my direction, I half smiled back and reminded myself to breathe.
And he's a quintessential, strong, solid, quiet type.
Right.
He only speaks when he needs to. Although I think she sees the antithesis of how friendly he is with his friends.
She always feels like he has only so many words to say a day.
It's all about timing, when all of the stars start aligning. Leaves no time for reminding the choices we should have made.
As though allowed only so many syllables per day, Daddy made sure not to use too many at once. His bronzed face and creased forehead made him appear older than some of my friends' fathers, but I realized that wasn't the case.
So won't you step in, tiptoe the water, won't you step in? Oh, won't you step in? Step in, tiptoe the water, won't you? Step in.
And you spoke about how he's self-medicating, he's drinking. Gracie uses the word sick in quotations a lot in the book. What kind of different meanings does the word sick have?
Well, Gracie, she says in the book that there was throwing up sick, like the time she has the flu, and then there's sick and tired. And she quotes Mama when she says that, because Mama will say that she was sick and tired of hearing the girls argue, or I'm sick and tired of seeing you run around, you know, run outside and play. And then there's Daddy's kind of sick from drinking too much beer and whiskey.
It's not just a feeling. It's something that keeps us believing. Oh, if we could just leave it.
Mama believed it really was a sickness, but I thought it was a lame excuse for pure meanness. Nana, my grandmother, said our bodies were temples, and if Daddy didn't stop poisoning his, one of these days it would kill him. I was waiting for that time, which made me feel a little sick inside.
Is Gracie ambivalent toward her father?
She definitely has mixed feelings about him. Even as a kid, she knows he's the one person who should be taking care of her. He should be protecting her, providing for her, making her feel safe. Yet mostly she's afraid of him because of his drinking. And fear is a powerful thing. It muddles everything.
Give us a sense of her notion of his drinking.
You know, it really depends on his audience. And he's the type of person who seems to always have a little bit of alcohol in his system. If he drinks a lot and he has his friends around him, he's the star of the show. He's everybody's best friend.
So with his friends, yeah. He's the good old boy.
And Gracie saw a lot of that. That's when she learned to just sort of hide in her bedroom and lay low. She learned to start counting the beer in the refrigerator just to sort of keep track of how much he was drinking. And she worried that he was going to go to hell.
I was sown into the ground. I couldn't even make a sound without being wrong. And who knew that I could ever carry up my hollow soul without ever looking down, without ever.
This is Arts and Letters. We'll be back in a moment. Let's rejoin our conversation with Arkansas Delta writer Talia Tate Berner.
Without ever looking down, without
I think Mama, as I read it, she's in a pretty consistent mood. I mean, she can get angry, but she seems pretty consistent as
a
character.
I would agree.
Because the father is so overshadowing in this book as you were writing it, what role did you want the mom to play? I mean, she's a strong character, and she comes out more later, I think.
I wanted her to really be that the glue of that story and show that she was the person Gracie trusted.
Shadow lost forbidden space where I could thrive, a place where I could find myself instead of hide, and all my doubts defeated just behind the silver.
But Gracie would also get frustrated with her because, in a way, her mom would present this other side that was a little incongruent with maybe what Mama was saying. So part of her role was that. It was just sort of a way for Gracie to think through all her questions. Like, well, Mama doesn't do that.
Above the curtains and the lights. Above the curtains and these lights, and flying so high that they never hit the ground.
And she seems to be struggling with Mama as a woman and Mama as her mama. Mama kind of melts when they go out for their dates.
Right.
I don't think Gracie can understand why she's putting up with it.
She can't. And she asks her about that at times, and she struggles with that.
I was sown into the ground where I was robbed. I couldn't even make a sound
So tell us about Abby, the younger sister. She's much wiser than her years.
Woke up at 7, could have slept until noon. I baked some bread and had time to lick the spoon. Isn't it wonderful when you've got nothing to do?
Abby is Gracie's little sister. She's adorable.
Taking my time, don't gotta be on the run. No, don't have much money, I just do it for fun. Oh, it doesn't matter when you've got nothing to do.
She's a bit more outgoing than Gracie. She's the baby of the family, and she looks up to Gracie, copies her, watches her. Gracie calls her the biggest copycat in the history of copycats.
But I just love that for this moment in time, I've got nothing on my mind.
But she's Gracie's best friend, and so Abby and Gracie very much fall into the birth order roles, with Gracie being a little bit more responsible big sister, maybe more aware of what's going on with the adults in the family. And then Abby is the free-spirited little sister, and she is based on my little sister, Stacy.
So what did Stacy say?
I don't know. I'm not sure she liked her name, the name I gave her.
No.
But I don't really know if I will ever be satisfied. But I just love that for this moment in time, I've got nothing on my mind.
All right, let's eavesdrop on a conversation between Gracie Lee and Abby.
Gracie, where do you think the clouds go after they pass our house?
I'm not sure. Maybe Memphis?
I bet Elvis sees the same clouds we do.
I bet so, too.
So whenever you feel like you're too tightly wound, please just remember it's okay to slow down and cherish those moments when you've got nothing.
Do you think Daddy's gonna die?
Yes, everyone will die sooner or later.
That's not what I mean, Gracie.
I know.
So what's your answer about Daddy?
Nothing to do.
Here, she's blunt, and she says, do you think he's going to die? And she doesn't really have an answer for that, but she's the big sister, and she's trying to be strong.
Right.
Yeah.
I didn't have an answer. On the afternoon of our family meeting, Mama had said his condition was serious, but the doctors caught it early.
When you lay out there trying to dance out those blues, and you're living your whole life with your head in a
he'll be good as new after the procedure in a few days,
Mama had said with a slight tremble in her voice. I think he'll be fine, Abby.
I wasn't so scared you'd forget me. Might be farther down the line. There you go again, turning golden. Right there in front of me.
So for all of her truth-telling precociousness, Gracie is funny. She's funny throughout the story. You need that humor to offset the parts that are not funny at all.
Right. I think it goes back to the old saying, out of the mouths of babes. Gracie doesn't hold back. She flat out says what she thinks without dressing it up, and it often sounds humorous because of her innocence and young age. Sometimes my thoughts were silly and amounted to nothing, like why I favored strawberry ice cream over chocolate. But often I wondered about bottomless things, like what happened when old people died, or why I was born to Lee and Ann Abbott instead of Elvis and Priscilla Presley.
Oh, darling, darling, won't you see this thing?
I really did wonder that a lot.
I understand. Let's talk about Gracie and Mama and Abby's relationship toward Elvis Presley. Living right down the road, very famous. It's, you know, in Memphis. And for her, this is a whole otherworldly experience. She's very excited about it. But yet at the same time, they have to take a trip to Memphis to visit their father, who's in the hospital and going to go through a pretty serious procedure.
Oh, darling.
She sees his picture in the newspaper, and he's in the same hospital right. as her father. What was the mythos of Elvis?
Okay, so growing up in Northeast Arkansas, we were only a 45-minute drive from Memphis. So our newspaper and our news came out of Memphis instead of Little Rock. And when Elvis was home in Memphis, it was the 1970s, when Elvis was home in Memphis, he always made the newspaper. Either because he was spotted handing out diamond rings at the gates of Graceland, or because he was in the Baptist Hospital. He was always in the hospital, it seemed. So when I was a kid, and this is a true story, if he was in the hospital, my mom and my nana and my sister and I would load up in the car and drive to Memphis and circle the Baptist Hospital just to see his window. He was always on the 18th floor, and his window was always covered in aluminum foil, so we could spot the window. It was a destination, no other reason.
So this comes out of imagination, but also some truth.
Yes, my dad was never in the hospital with Elvis.
Did you ever stop the car?
No, I think we just circled and circled and
to see the
aluminum. Would, you know, slow down at the stoplights and point to the windows, but it was crazy. But it was my crazy.
There you go again, turning golden.
I glanced at the front page of the paper so my eyes would have something to do. The headline read, Elvis Treated for Hypertension. Mama, what's hypertension?
High blood pressure.
Elvis has it.
I'm not surprised.
You're listening to Arts and Letters. We're talking with Talia Tate Berner about her coming-of-age novel set in the Arkansas Delta, The Accidental Salvation of Gracie Lee.
Mama, what hospital is Daddy in?
Baptist.
Are you kidding me? That's where Elvis is.
I guess with all the craziness going on, I missed that. Maybe we'll see Elvis this afternoon when we pick up your daddy.
Daddy had been in the hospital the entire first week of August. Mama never said much about the surgery other than they think they got it all. I really didn't know what it meant, but later I overheard her tell Maggie that Daddy's stomach tumor had been the size of a grapefruit. Do you really think we'll see Elvis today?
Gracie, I'm kidding.
When I try to close my eyes.
I felt certain I would meet Elvis later that day, so I planned to wear a nice dress to the hospital just in case.
At that moment, you do throw in the seriousness of the father's condition. Gracie kind of knows it but doesn't. With Abby and Gracie, they do sense there's a real seriousness too.
They sense it in that way that kids know something's going on, but they're still focused on just the things right in front of them, right. Like Elvis. The hospital was shaped like a building with wings, two towers connected in the center with a fountain out front. All around, the grounds looked park-like, with benches scattered under tall shade trees. There it is! I stretched my arm toward the sky and pointed, straining to see Elvis's hospital window. Elvis's top floor window was easy to spot because it was covered with aluminum foil.
Where?
Stop hanging out the window like a couple of dogs.
The hospital world with its pristine nurses and medicine smells was different than any place I'd ever seen.
Listen to me. There are sick people here. You can't be loud. Think of it like a library. Sit with Nana and read the books you brought. Mind what she says.
Sitting in an uncomfortable waiting room chair while Elvis lay somewhere above me proved to be harder than sitting on the rigid pews in Boone Chapel. Nana, can I get something to drink? I saw a machine by the elevator. I slipped the quarter into the slot, opened the glass door, and yanked a Coca-Cola from the vending machine. Then I stepped inside the empty elevator, poked the close button over and over to make the door shut faster, and set off to find Elvis. When I pushed the white button for floor 18, the highest floor in the hospital, nothing happened. So I pushed 17. I took two stairs at a time. Then when I reached the next landing, stopped and stared at the door marked 18. Act casual, I told myself.
Can I help you?
Oh my goodness, you scared me! A bald man with white bushy eyebrows stood blocking my entrance into the hallway.
Are you lost?
No, I came to visit Elvis.
Mr. Presley is not receiving fans right now. And no one under 12 is allowed outside the waiting room. Where are your parents?
My daddy's dead and my mother used to date Elvis. I stammered and rushed back out the door, letting it slam behind me.
At that moment when you were writing it, did you consider having her meet Elvis?
No.
No? Okay. I was just wondering, because we wanted to meet Elvis.
Well, I tried to think, what would it really be like? And I bet they had that whole floor blocked off right. And nobody could get up there. So I thought that was sort of a realistic way to handle it. But the idea that he was in that building, you know, that was a big thing.
I found it, as persistent as she is, interesting that she does say, my mama used to date him, which I like, but she kind of slinks off. I thought, oh no, she's going to like try a different, up the stairs maybe. Throughout the novel, Gracie has a strange, albeit trying, relationship with religion, Boone Chapel, her church, and its preacher, Brother Brown.
Yes, Gracie has several struggles regarding church and religion. One of her most simple and basic struggles is that she's bored. She finds church service boring. I just got back from church camp.
Yes, I heard.
I told Brother Brown, who stood in front of the pulpit practically waiting for me. He wore the same brown suit, brown tie, and brown shoes that he always wore.
So help us with Brother Brown, because he's a very interesting figure in this book. She confesses to him. He doesn't take the place of her father, but she tells him certainly more than she tells her dad.
Right.
So who is Brother Brown in this? What does he represent?
So Brother Brown is based on the preacher at my church when I grew up, and Gracie sees him as that person who has all the answers, and she takes advantage of the opportunity to go up and ask her questions to him.
How was it, Gracie?
It was okay. A lot of people got saved, but since I'm already baptized, most of it was a waste of time for me. I did have an experience I wanted to talk to you about. Something weird that made me feel closer to God. Something that made me feel He really does exist.
So she tells the story about sneaking away to the devil's bathtub, and it's supposed to be bottomless, and they almost meet catastrophe. But she's always telling tall tales.
She does.
And Brother Brown is like, is that true, Gracie?
You know, when she has to write what I did on my summer vacation, the teacher calls her up and says, this is supposed to be a true story, Gracie. It's not supposed to be fiction. She's thinking, it is true, and if you only knew what I left out of the story.
Is that a true story, Gracie?
Yes, sir. And afterward, the stars were shining, and it seemed like God was all around. Do you know what I mean?
God is all around. Gracie, the devil will get into your head and make you doubt your faith.
But do you ever think the whole thing may be something to make us feel better and give us hope, like a fairy tale?
You have to stand strong in your faith. Believe in your salvation.
I'm J. Bradley Minnick, and you're listening to Arts and Letters. We're talking with Talia Tate Berner about growing up in the Delta, the accidental salvation of Gracie Lee. Thanks for joining us for part one of Grace Lee Eudora Abbott. To hear part two, go to artsandlettersradio.org.